Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Now you are walled around with a wall. Siege is laid against us. With a rod they strike the ruler of Israel upon the cheek. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from of old, from the ancient days. Therefore he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel. And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall live secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth. And he shall be the one of peace.
Few verses that Lori read for us, tucked away in a very slim prophetic book of the Bible, the prophet Micah captures both the ache with which so many of us live each day and the hope that I believe is in us for a future peace that only God is going to deliver. Once again this week, just on the other side of the tragic shooting in San Bernardino, we experienced another threat. Even though it was a hoax, it turned out to be, that something terrifying might happen in one of our school districts somewhere across our country. The overwhelming message, hoax or not, is that it is part of our everyday understanding now that our children in our schools are not safe. Christmas is coming on this fourth Sunday of Advent, and we hear that there was not in Micah's day, nor is there today, peace on earth, goodwill to all God's people. We hear that the world is not yet as God intends it to be. Life is precarious, and so too are the securities that we purchase with our dollars and in which we place so much trust to keep us safe. I think we also place a lot of trust in our institutions, those same institutions who we have learned are not too big to fail, and those that we try really hard to shore up so that, God forbid, they do fail and we want to keep them afloat. Life is precarious and fragile, and it's ever-changing. We also place trust in those who we elect to be our officials, our community leaders. But like us, they're here today and they're gone tomorrow. And yet, while we are naturally looking towards our leaders, our governors, our presidents, our prime ministers, and others, and we keep our eye focused on Washington, D.C., or the Kremlin, or the United Nations, as we're doing all of that and holding all that, this prophet Micah comes in this morning, kind of waving his arms up and down, desperately trying to point us in an entirely different direction. He's pointing away from the epicenters of power to a small, out-of-the-way place, a town. It's called Bethlehem. And he's pointing to a leader who stands, he says, in the strength of the Lord, rather than in the strength of our weapons that we carry for security, or our power that we hold, or our social location in which we live, or our wealth, or the territory that we claim. Here is a difference that really makes a difference, Micah cries, and it can take one's breath away, this promise that he's trying to wave out there in front of us. It can take our breath away, I think, because we really want it to be true. And also, it can take our breath away because it seems like such a long shot. Seems like such a long shot. Slim possibility, slim to none. Not even possible that a place that he's talking about would be rooted in solid ground, because it can't be that simple. It can't be that thin place. Bethlehem? A thin place, according to the ancients that have come before us, was the small space that existed between heaven and earth. And if you could find such a place or a space, you would be blessed by this moment of grace. I've known thin places in my life, but I didn't have the language for them until I started reading a book by Barbara Brown Taylor a couple of years ago, where she describes thin places as the places on this earth where the veil between this world and the next is so sheer that it's easy for us to step through it. And there is no one thin place, but there are many thin places. And sometimes they are actual places. Sometimes, though, they are moments in time, set apart by the quality of light that's shining or flickering or reflecting off the clouds, or the way the shadows are set, or the rhythm that occurs in the music that you're hearing, a combination of notes that rise up from the keyboard, or the scene that's set before you, and the lines that are delivered in just the right way. You find yourself opened up. What thin places hold in common is the way they shine the light between this world and another, or the way they shine the light on a reality and then a deeper reality. There's this way in which in a thin place, the veil is like pushed aside just for a moment, and you can like see from here to there, sometimes dimly, but you catch a glimpse. Sometimes I know I'm in a place like that because it's like being in an elevator, like at the top floor, and suddenly whoosh, you're going to the bottom and you just feel it like in your gut. Ugh. That's a scientific name. Ugh. For a thin place. Sometimes it's more like sighing. And I slide from here to there, and tears come up when I least expect it. There are really reliably thin places for me. This sanctuary is one of them. At all different times of the day, when the light comes through at different colors. The Big Island in Hawaii, even though I haven't been there in 16, 17 years, is a reliably thin place for me. Certain cups of tea on certain sidewalks in a certain city called Berkeley, that is a thin place for me, reliably so. But then sometimes thin places pop up unexpectedly, like in my kitchen table during our sharing, around the homework table, when we're all working, and it sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, but stuff happens. In the front seat of my car, everyone facing forward, and these truths come out Sometimes it happens watching an iconic TV special that was only supposed to run one time and then get shelved because it was too religious and didn't follow the formula for success in its day. And the soundtrack for that same little TV special that we all now know as Charlie Brown Christmas. Thin Places. This morning we heard Lori read Micah's promise that in the closing years of the Assyrian reign, there was a small, out-of-the-way, nowhere town called Bethlehem that would be a thin place and produce a shepherd king. I want to say a little bit more about this so we understand the actual setting of this text. The prophet Micah called the people of Judah to focus and to focus hard on finding a thin place in the midst of where they were living, which was this huge threat of foreign invasion. It was like a raging storm, and the Assyrian invaders were bearing down on them to wipe them off the map, wipe them away as God's instrument of judgment against God's people. And they would dodge that particular fate against them from the Assyrians, but soon they would not escape, and the Babylonians would come and invade. And like so many of us, those people of Judah made a mistake of thinking that God was really far away from them and unreachable to them. So they put up thick walls of resistance as a way of holding God at a distance no matter what. But history tells us that God would break through, however, their walls, literally and figuratively and spiritually, and their walls would eventually all come tumbling down around them. Theologian Calvin Miller writes this: the best prophecy always gets specific with its zip codes. For Micah, the address of the Messiah was really clear and certain. Out of the many villages, and most of the villages of that day of ancient Israel had, we think, about 1,000 people in them, there was the specific place that offered a world a new way of establishing the peace. It was going to be in one of these little villages. And the point is that this specific place, Bethlehem in Ephrathah, was the place where the international shepherd king was going to rise up. And it's really maybe hard for us sometimes to imagine impressive historical heroes as coming from really small towns, but, you know, we had Plains, Georgia. We had a great musician, maybe, in our minds. They would come from the school of music at Juilliard, right? You'd never think of a great musician, say, rising forth from San Francisco State University, a commuter school. And yet, in the midst of all this impending doom, God offers a word of hope through the prophet with a promise to create a new thin place for God's people. This remote, out-of-the-way place that was populated with only a few shepherd families. I just hear the sheep making their sheep sounds, dotting across the pastures in Bethlehem, a place nobody expected. God was going to bring the life of heaven to earth in a really personal way. I want us to remember that Bethlehem was also where King David had come from. And it was there in Bethlehem that King David was chosen as an unlikely successor to the reign of King Saul, who people really adored, who was Israel's idea of what a king should really look like. God, of course, had a very different idea. The shepherd boy named David was anointed and would rule Israel after Saul successfully for quite some time until his own personal downfall. And despite all that was about to happen to the remnant of David's people, the people he had ruled in Micah's day, the prophet was assuring them that God was not going to abandon that same promise that a king was going to come from David's hometown to rule Israel. One whose origin would be from old, from really ancient days. This king, in other words, would follow this progression and would represent God to the people. And in the meantime, while they were waiting, God would give up God's people to exile. We call it the Exodus, until that king would be born. And after his birth, God's people would be brought back from distant lands. And then that shepherd king would stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord. That was verses 3 and 4. And all of that would happen because God was going to create a thin place there in Bethlehem, not where they expected. It wasn't how they expected God's peace to get established. And one could hardly imagine that this thin little out-of-the-way place would give birth to the lyrics, "Silent night, holy night," or "O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie." See, it's interesting to me that most people in Micah's day thought that the ultimate thin place for them in the world was the temple in Jerusalem, which was the place where it was thought that God dwelled with God's people. But Israel's salvation wasn't going to come from that temple, the future of which was already in jeopardy and falling apart, crumbling. Security wasn't going to be found in relying on the institution that had been established religiously, but in the true King of God's, who would bring security and peace through this different kind of reign. And instead of a grand and elaborate, beautiful temple place where heaven and earth come together, the place where God was going to land with God's people was going to be a feeding trough in a back alley of the tiniest and most insignificant of places. So that brings us in part to where we begin this mystery we call Christmas. We're in this final week of Advent. We're getting really close. Christmas is coming. And every week of Advent, we've been looking back at these ancient writings from the Hebrew Bible and holding them with the beautiful, iconic Charlie Brown Christmas special, not just for any reason, but because it's 50 years old this year. And we do this in Advent because Advent is the season of the church year in which we prepare for the coming of Christmas. It's the first season for us. And it literally comes from the word Adventus in Latin, which means arrival. Christmas is coming. Christmas is going to arrive. God is coming. And we're waiting in Advent. If you can actually believe it, 4 weeks ago we started this. You know, Thanksgiving is just over. And Matt helped us by introducing and reminding us about Charlie Brown Christmas and this really iconic conversation between Charlie Brown and Linus, where Linus, you know, tells Charlie Brown, "You are the only one I know who can take the most wonderful season of the world and turn it into a problem." That's told Charlie Brown. And then the next week I was trying to work on Snoopy and looking at love and how God's refining love might be sharpening and getting us ready for the second week of God's coming. Last week, Matt held up the possibility of joy that is present in the midst of judgment and suffering as we live into these last days of Advent preparation for Christmas to come on this fourth and final Sunday of Advent. We have these ancient words of Micah announcing a surprise location, a humble origin of the ruler who will reverse the fortunes of God's people who are really suffering under warring conditions. Surprise pairings, humble origins, and reversals of fortunes are echoed in the characters and the scenes of Charlie Brown Christmas, and also in the story of the soundtrack. We've been also blessed to listen each week to one or more of the pieces from the soundtrack. And this week, Brendan's going to, and they, or I guess it's Brendan's, going to play for us O Tannenbaum. And the reason we're going to listen to this today is this song, before Charlie Brown Christmas, had been played in a certain way, right? Oh, Christmas tree, Imperial March. Let's listen to this version that was introduced to all of us. The album looked like this. Now, I don't know about you, but when you have a well-loved album, my real memory is that, you know, it was relief outlined from the record going in and out and being pushed in and out so much. And then there was this time when my kids were getting older and we were at a certain coffee shop. And they were hearing this music, and they're like, can we see the other one? Mom, we should get this new album. I've never heard it before. I'm like, you have heard it since you were born. And I've been having this memory thing. I'm going rogue here for just a second. But I've been having this memory thing, so I realize my mom's in the room. I'm going to put you on the spot. We did not have a color television like in 1964, did we? No. So I was realizing, why is my vision of this so different? I didn't see it had been in color. Be quiet. Didn't see it in color. I don't know when that happened. You see, this iconic special and this soundtrack came to us in a different way because it was jazz. And many of us may already know that jazz music, you know, it's an acquired taste. And jazz is created from unanticipated riffs and improvisation which change with every playing, so that singing along is, like, really not the point. And I just want you to know, he totally played that differently at 9:30. Totally different. And underneath that free-flowing sound that we call jazz are hours and hours of memorization and study. You see, jazz is complex in its simplicity. The perfect music to accompany the Peanuts Gang, but not according to Coca-Cola and CBS, who were the sponsors of that little show. The soundtrack was composed by jazz piano great Vince Guaraldi, a prophet of my alma mater, San Francisco State University. Not expected either. With Fred Marshall on bass and Jerry Grinnelli on bass. And Jerry Grinnelli says of this, "We did that music in a day and a half, maybe two. That's just how you recorded records back then." That's kind of amazing. This album was and continues to be possibly the most important gateway for generation after generation of children and adults to explore the endless possibilities of jazz music. It's a lot like the Peter and the Wolf album for those of us exploring classical music. Yet for the executives of the day who expected sing-alongs with Burl Ives, Garaldi's score was deemed too weird. This is a quote. "It's too weird, it's too dark, and it's too strange. The same soundtrack that was derided by those suits has proven to be durable all the way to today, with its melancholy way of offering what I would say is a more realistic musical reflection on the mixed emotions that happen this time of year. Maybe the soundtrack itself, then, you see, becomes a thin place. When it was born, and through every generation of ears that continue to hear it. Drummer Jerry Grinnelli says it like this in Rolling Stone. Part of the magic of the whole thing is that nobody had any big plans while making that soundtrack. Like, this is it? We just played, man. I love how he says that. And if you've ever been in here before worship starts and you watch these fabulous people, wherever they are, that's what they do. They come in and they just play. It's jazz. And then Jerry continues. He said, honestly, I turned left creatively with my career after that album, and I never thought about it for a while. Jazz musicians, he said, are sometimes not as open as they may seem when it comes to people having hits or things crossing over into the mainstream. Everybody gets all uppity. He's trying to say that jazz musicians weren't all happy that the general public was liking this music. But he says, I matured enough to realize that it went way beyond our music. It was the first entry point to jazz for a lot of people. That sounds like it has the earmarks of a thin place to me. And I want to say that Jerry Grinnelli was born in 1940. 31 years later, jazz pianist Jamie Saft, born in 1971, is quoted as remembering watching Charlie Brown Christmas on his great aunt's television set as a family. And he said this, the space that Vince Guaraldi created with his music was certainly an influence on the development of my musical language as a child. That drummer, Jerry Grinnelli, has a particular flow that can be heard perfectly in his brushwork on A Christmas Time Is Here. And that lilting, swinging, shuffling feel defined the feeling of swing for me as a jazz musician long before I ever checked out Monk or Davis or Charlie Byrd. That's huge. You see, despite their fears and their reservations, the power struggles and all the high-level negotiations, Charlie Brown Christmas has stayed with us through the ages, and the music has become a thin place in which, right here, where we are today, the intention of those original creators and God's creative spirit, despite the powers that be, come together and meet. And it's not just jazz music that makes that kind of space thin for us. Christmas carols themselves become the space for us. Silent Night is a thin place. You've seen it happen. Sung in a sanctuary on Christmas Eve by candlelight that moves from complete darkness, from person to person, from child to senior, standing side by side, a whole family in a pew that fought in the car all the way here. Suddenly, we're weeping in the hush and the silence. And the space between us becomes really thin. And the space between all of us and God until we can hear and feel our actual longing for peace and joy and love and hope wrap all around us. And it only lasts for a moment. But sometimes that moment is just enough. See, the executives of Coke and CBS did not believe that A Charlie Brown Christmas would go anywhere but one showing and archived. It's recorded that that's what they said and thought. And really, Vince Guaraldi from San Francisco State Music, he didn't know that 2 days in a recording studio with his little trio would inspire millions across our land. And those people in Micah's day did not believe that God would appear in the form of a child from a small town in the middle of nowhere to an unwed teenage mommy. That's the tune of our story. So, as we prepare for Christmas in these last few days, because Christmas is coming, maybe the best preparation really is to take time and listen to the music and find God's peace in that music. Find God is just on the other side or right underneath it or right around the next corner, ready to be revealed to you, to our whole world. Allow yourself in these next few days to live into the advent of God's new reality of God and who God is, of what God has already done in Mary, who we heard sung about, and her deep, deep way of taking a risk and following God. In Joseph and his courage to accompany her, and in Jesus, who we now know would be born, and what God may do this Christmas. You know, if we really love and admire those characters, Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in the manger, that have been passed down to us over time, why not this Christmas try to imitate them? Not as statues standing on the mantle, but in hope that they will help us to remember that God is not far away from us, just like God was not far away from them. Maybe we can imitate this time their courage to trust God, to follow God to Bethlehem and beyond. And may we really remember when we're trying to imitate their courage that they didn't ask for permission and they didn't wait for lobbyists to change laws. They didn't have a safety net either, except for God carrying them, extended over a very long journey, which was a thin place. May we be bold in knowing that peace begins in our hearts and in our relationships. May we consider that there may be others who long for this new reality as we have courage maybe to speak about it, as Matt said, or to offer a social media post for the very first time that says, "I go to church. Come with me. I'll meet you there." Tell them about the music. Tell them about candles. Everybody loves candles. Tell them about the feelings you get of being in a thin place, and how you have experienced that God's love really is for all of God's people, not just for a few. And invite them to worship with you on Christmas Eve. Because, you know, Micah, that prophet of old, just like the city of LA and all those other school districts this last week, lived for a moment under a credible threat of destruction, and they had to make a decision. God did not let them go or abandon them, and God called them and calls all of us to a way of peace that God is bringing forth from Bethlehem. So may this meal, all set here for all of us behind me, take us those next few steps over these next last days before Christmas. May it give us the sustenance we need to have courage. And may our table here be a thin place in which we see and feel God breaking through our fears and our deep longings for peace today and every day. Amen.
Oh,